And welcome back once again to the Parish of the Patriots. This is the 370th installment. That sounds like a number that ought to really mean something. You know, it's like a special occasion, but it's just another show. But gratefully, we try to do all of our shows. I try to do all the shows where they're pretty good. So each one is equally special. We celebrate equality here at the Parish of the Patriots on Radio Albion. Either way, I'm glad you joined us this week. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy to pay those size. You can drop something in the mail, and that's all I got is the mail. The old fashioned, I'm old school. And it's like once in a while I'll run into somebody, you know, and they'll say, hey, do you do that thing on the phone? You know, I'm talking about just IRL interactions with somebody. And they'll say, hey, do you do that thing, you know, with the Venmo or the cash thing on the phone? And I always just look at them and say, man, I'm old. Do I look like I do? Do I look like I comprende l'espagnol for you? Do I look like I comprende doing the newfangled thing on the phone? I'm old school. It's got to be paper. And that's how we are here. I've got, and you can put an envelope. That's what I comprende. And it is much appreciated. Looking there, we don't have a listener supporter mailbag this week. The mailbox was empty. So we will just keep on trucking. And as always, we're going to have a lot of different things we're going to get into. Some Christian specific stuff. We're going to do some regular current event topics, and probably wind up back and forth, but I'm confident, or I'm at least hopeful, that you'll find all of it, and if not all of it, at least most of it, somewhat informative, entertaining, and maybe a brand new point of view. I do like to know when I'm recording the show, that way if we're not keeping up, obviously, with current events. You know why I'm recording this on Saturday morning. The day varies a little bit. Most of the time I do try to do the shows over the weekend, and I am indeed recording this on Saturday morning. So, you know, if the whole world, as I always say, if the world blows up on Monday and I'm not talking about it on this show, that is the reason why. Although, if something truly huge happened, I would probably re-record the show. Or maybe, who knows, maybe we'd even do another roundtable or something if it was a big enough event. So, otherwise, you know, if it's just commonplace events, I'm not recording a new show for that. Commonplace events being, oh, I don't know, Trump going off his rocker and making more demands of the world and threatening somebody. Who knows who that somebody could be? It could be the Pope. It's just whatever tickles his fancy that day. So, yeah, you know, those are just commonplace events. If like an actual, I don't know, nuke gets set off or something, I would probably do another show for that. So it's got to be something fairly big like that. But anyway, we do got a lot of different stuff to get into this week. I've got different things I've jotted down, but of course, the big thing about, you know, I hope y'all aren't getting tired of me talking about this conflict with Iran. But I mean, that is the news that's drowning everything else out. And, you know, it's a pretty big deal. It's just it's something to watch, the back and forth. You know, the United States is just proving itself over and over to be completely agreement incapable. I mean, at some point, nobody is going to even talk to this government or any representatives of this government, because why would they? There's no point. They'll tell you one thing and then they'll go off and do something else. I mean, they'll make an agreement, then they'll turn around the next day, decide the agreement doesn't exist. I mean, and this is, as I've seen some people refer to it, the Israelization. The Israelization of the U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, it kind of makes sense. Same people are running the government. So, you know, you get the same behavior because, you know, the big news was Israel is supposedly, they finally agreed to a ceasefire in Lebanon. And, you know, like, who at this point expects our greatest ally to actually ever, they've never, as far as I know, have ever adhered to a ceasefire agreement. I saw a story from before recording, and it said something along the lines of, you know, after agreeing to the ceasefire, Israel, that is, you know, Trump then publicly announced that Israel wouldn't be bombing Lebanon anymore. And it said Netanyahu was shocked by this. Like, what the hell does this guy even think a ceasefire is? What do you mean? We a ceasefire and we're not. I should try to imitate Netanyahu. What do you mean a ceasefire? Nah, it doesn't work either. What do you mean a ceasefire, but we can't keep bombing them? What sort of new form of anti-Semitism is this? We got to agree to a ceasefire and we can't keep bombing them. And then Iran says, okay, well, you're finally, Trump was spinning this as, see, Iran is agreeing to everything I'm demanding. No, Iran comes out and says, well, you finally have agreed to our basic terms to talks to a ceasefire. So we'll go ahead and hold up our end of the bargain. And we said during the ceasefire, we would open up the Strait of Hormuz if you agreed to these things. The greatest ally continuing to bomb Lebanon was one of the one of the things demanded. And so they're like, we'll open up the strait. So you would think, oh, hey, finally, some breathing room for the global economy. But of course you can't have that. This is why we can't have nice things. So Trump says, this is great, but we're going to keep the naval blockade up until they give us everything we want. I don't understand. Well, I do understand. Sorry, I accidentally banged my mic there, and I don't feel like taking the time to edit that out and make it professional. I don't understand. You know, it's obvious Trump and the government, they need a way out of this. They do. But see, he just can't help himself. He just can't help himself. I read in a lot of people have sources, supposedly. Anybody can claim anything. I'm always a little skeptical. But there are quite a few people claiming to have sources in the White House, and they say that he's got, man's going on 80 years old, and, that he's got early stage dementia. This is why he's become so erratic and flies off the handle. They say he just flies off the handle and has like zero filter. And I mean, there may be some truth to that. He's truly getting more and more, I don't want to say crazy, but definitely unpredictable, definitely erratic. And one of the reasons I think there may be some truth to that is, all of is, like with dealing with your relatives, grandparents, whatever. And, as they get older, if they live long enough and they get older, they start mentally regressing. And if they have dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that, it tends to aggravate it. And things that were, kind of small aspects of their personality become exaggerated. Again, a lot of you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't, if you're younger, you've never experienced that, you will over your lifetime. You'll understand. As people regress mentally when they get older, they become more childlike. That's why, they'll become prone to tantrums, and I'm talking about getting older, like when you start getting up around 80 years old plus, and they regress, they'll become more childlike. And again, if they get actual dementia or Alzheimer's or something, it's just like gas on the fire. And things, like I say, were just fairly minor or subsets of their original personalities, all of a sudden they become real exaggerated. Maybe they would tend to get aggravated. Well, then they become aggravated about everything, or they fly off the handle. And I see some of that in this guy's public behavior. So I think there could be something to that. But anyway, as of recording the show this morning, now Iran said, well, we're closing the strait back up because, you finally agree to the Lebanon part, and now you're turning around and you've added this blockade, and you say you're just going to continue it until we give you everything you want. Well, that's not going to happen. So you've added a new wrench in the works. It doesn't make any sense because the U.S., by every metric, wants out of this. They know they're in a mess. They want out of it. But again, they just, they just can't seem to help themselves. Now, talking about, who's going to negotiate? The problem with breaking every single agreement is at some point in time, nobody agrees with you. And same with these negotiations. I was reading where, after the failed negotiations in Pakistan, the Iranian delegation was, worried about going back because the U.S. was essentially openly threatening to kill the negotiators. And they've done it before, at the whole outset of this thing. So ultimately, Pakistan basically gave them an air escort back to Iran. You know, if you're going to kill the negotiators, at some point, no one will negotiate with you. See, that's the problem. You know, when people say, why doesn't, for instance, why doesn't Putin just take out Zelensky? Well, because the problem is, if you do that, then who are you going to negotiate? At some point in time, every conflict has to have a negotiated settlement. Every war in history has had a negotiated settlement. Because, even if it's just, even if you said, I'm going to demand unconditional surrender, somebody has to surrender to you. If there's nobody left, there's nobody to surrender to you. It has to be official. You've got to have some. There has to be, in other words, somebody has to sign the paper. And if you keep killing the people that would sign the paper with you, there's no one to sign the paper and everything just keeps going. This is basic stuff. And they can't. It's just, I don't know. And it really is the Israelization. I'm trying to find a way to say that. Of America, of the U.S. government. Again, not surprising, but to see it so openly, they're not even, they're not even putting up a front. They're not even dressing it up, not even pretending. Now, I've said, and I will keep repeating, when the Tories lost in the UK, I kept pointing out that, nobody jumped up and decided they loved the Labour Party. They just won by default. Because the Tory voters finally caught on that this is useless, a waste of time, quit voting, and by default the Tories win, or I'm sorry, the Labour Party wins. And, lo and behold, shock of shocks, the Labour Party is horribly unpopular. But it's not surprising, because they didn't have a mandate, people didn't run out and vote for them because they loved their agenda. They just kind of by default won, and we're headed towards that same thing. And I was saying at the time that that happened, that the U.S. is going to be doing the same thing. You just need the same pattern. We're just running a little behind. Well, we're heading towards that now because the TMR voters are now throwing their hands up. The average normal Republican voters are just, they're just going to give up. And so what you're going to have, we're headed towards, is the Democrats are going to wipe them out in the midterm elections. But like with the Labour Party in the U.K., it's not because the majority of the country jumped up and has decided we love the Democrats now. We want more gay. We want more. We want more transgender story hour, drag queen story hour, or whatever the hell. It's not that. It's just that your Republican voters are going to say this is a waste of time, which I would say, welcome to the party. You're a little late, but we still have a few snacks left. Go ahead and help yourself at the table. But that's where you're going to be at. The Republican Party voters are just going to not show up, but they're not going to run out and vote Democrat, or at least most of them aren't. They're just going to throw their hands up and say there's no point. And the Democrat voters, like the Labour Party voters, late to the party, it's going to be, oh, wow, what a shock. They're horrible, too. I see these Team D cheerleaders, and they act like it's all just started magically one day. They laugh about the Trump, because I said, hold on, I said the, Republican, the average Republican voters are just throwing their hands up at this point. Now there's a section to that, and that is the red hat cultists, the bad crab, whatever you want to say. The ones that it's a cult of personality. It doesn't matter. You could talk about whatever. You talk about, Epstein files or whatever. Look, Trump could rape a child on a street corner, and these people would still find a way to justify it. I'm talking about the cultists. The true believers, and it literally, where Trump said he could kill somebody in public and they'd still support him. That's who he's talking about. And again, you go back to this accentuated personality quirks and such. He understood when he said that about, he could kill somebody on a street corner and nobody, he would still have support. He understood, I think, at some point, or when he said that, that was a small segment. But now he really believes that, if he's declining mentally as he appears to be. No, the cultists are going to support him, but that's a small group of people. And a lot of, and the loudest voices on that are getting a check. But on the Team D side, you're going to have the same thing. And you have these voices, the cultists for the Team D side, and they're like, oh, so you voted for this guy, and this is what you get. Look, I've said it before, I say it again, every one of you knows this is true, but the truth is worth speaking. If we had a Democrat president right now instead of Donald Trump, we would have more or less, some details would be different, we would have more or less the same thing, only probably more gay stuff thrown in, you know, more crazy stuff at home thrown into the mix. That's why they installed Donald Trump, because, you know, they thought they obviously they planned to move forward with this war plan, and they weren't going to do it with Kamala Harris. If they weren't, if that was on the back burner and they were focusing on continuing to deteriorate America from inside, then they would put the Democrat in and put more weird social justice nonsense. You see this, you know, we know the pattern. But more and more people are coming to the position that the system is broken. Now, again and again, as more people do come to this realization, I continue to see, and you will continue to see, I guess, this false paradigm. It wears me out. This false paradigm that our only choices are what we have now or communism. And I see it over and over. You know, read a leftist, you know, somebody more left-leaning. I read their opinion pieces, and they'll have some good stuff. You know, because I read a wide range. I take in a wide range of opinions because I'm interested, and I'm only interested mostly in the truth. And sometimes people are correct, even though I may disagree with them otherwise. But I'll say, read somebody who's more left-leaning, you know, talking about, for instance, this war or Israel's genociding of the Palestinians. You know, and then, you know, and the American empire and the failing system, and you get to all of that. And then at the end, it's like, it's about time people realize that communism is not as bad as what they've been led. They've been lied to about communism. Really? I mean, no. No. Thank you. No, I don't want communism. You know, I don't. No, no. Nobody in their right mind wants freaking communism. I mean, just a basic, you know, it's not like I have a PhD and I've studied these things, but I have just basic knowledge of how, for instance, the Soviet Union or Mao's China functioned under communism. You can't point at modern China. Well, they're communists. Let's do that. Because, you know, they have... They're wearing the skin suit of communism, but they're not doing Mao communism. You know, it didn't just suddenly start working. They changed the system. Communism in China under Mao was an observed disaster. Millions of Chinese died under Mao's communism. Under communism. That is communism. It didn't just suddenly start working and now China is a great power in the world. They changed the system. Now, the difference is, you know, they had some people in the party and government that looked around and said, quietly said, this isn't working. This is not working. All we're doing is stupid stuff over and over and killing everybody. We need to do something else. They were smart enough to not turn around and just say, we need to be America. We need to be the United States. They figured out a different way. There are different ways. Don't let anyone tell you we're stuck with what we have now or communism. And then, of course... Of course, you've always got the third way that nobody's even ever bothered trying because it's so observably stupid, it wouldn't work, and that's the libertarians. Bless their hearts. Their hearts are in the right place, and it's not an evil ideology. It's just a childish and naive one. And I say that as somebody that in my younger days, you would classify me as a libertarian, what they call a small L libertarian, not one of the full on big L believe in complete anarchy. We don't even need a government because It's because then everybody would just get along. Everybody could respect each other's private property. We don't need the government itself is the problem. We need to dissolve all government and just live as a community. All it requires is everybody respecting each other's private property and not aggressing on one another. I always say, if you have a plan, if you think you have a solution to a problem, and your solution, the beginning of it starts with, if everyone will just, you could just stop because you just have a dream. You just have a fantasy. Everyone is not going to whatever. It doesn't matter what the thing is. If it starts with, if everyone will just, then you're just daydreaming because you're never, ever going to get everyone to just. They're just not. See how lazy I've been getting lazy. I didn't even hit pause to drink my coffee. Just on a roll. If everyone will just, respect each other. I always think, how do these people, because you got people, look, again, young people, I give them a break because they don't know any better. But when you got people that are like my age and they've held this dream that this would somehow work, and you're my age, that's sad. That's just sad. Everyone will just, I just wonder, have they never played this out in their heads? You know, have they never played it out? Like, okay, everybody, suddenly you snap your fingers, the government's dissolved, everybody's just going to live in a community and respect each other with non-aggression and respect each other's private property. Okay, well, right away, you know, there's going to be some people that are not going to do that. So you're going to have to protect yourself from them. So people are going to form defense groups of themselves. Again, if you've ever, organized a family reunion, you know that somebody has got to be in charge. So you're going to have somebody in charge of your organized group to defend yourselves. Settle disputes. Dun-dun, you've already formed a government. I mean, you know, just right off the bat, like on day two, you've formed a government. Now, you have the small, what they call the small L libertarians, and they're more like traditional conservatives. They want a smaller government. My founding fathers, which is completely irrelevant today, but everybody still longs for it. My founding fathers, we need a small government. You know, this is what the conservatives were saying, you know, decades ago. We need a smaller government, a small government. You notice the same conservatives, they didn't conserve that position either, because a small government can't go rage wars for Israel. So they threw that out. They resurrected it once in a while. These same people were whining and pissing and moaning and blaming the stimulus checks for the inflation. Oh, one of the reasons we got the inflation during the COVID is because they went and just gave everyone free money. It's like everyone's a bunch of deadbeats. Now, look, I'm not saying the government giving everybody a check is the way forward. But I find it just rubs my hair the wrong direction when you have these people who will sit there and go, giving people a stimulus, giving people money. That's not the government's job. What about the debt? But then these same people will sit here and rubber stamp $1 trillion for another war for Israel. I'll tell you that they're asking for, another $500 billion. They already got $1 trillion for their defense budget. So we're going to go to $1.5 trillion. And it's just a mercenary. The whole Department of Defense, every branch of America's heroes, is just a mercenary army for Israel at this point. I said it. Pray for our troops, America's heroes. They're a mercenary army for Israel. That's the reality. That's the truth. It may sound ugly. You may not like it. That's how the truth works. It's a mercenary army for Israel. I was thinking of this we're up to $1.5 trillion, and I'm sure it's more than that because a lot of it's off the books. That's just the stuff they talk about. How much, if you divided that up of American people, how much of a stimulus check could we get? Because we could all use it right now as fuel prices are going through the roof.
oh my God, the inflation, that's because you gave everybody free money. We need a smaller government.
Then, like I say, they threw that out the window because then if you have a smaller government, you can't go around the world fighting other countries for Israel. Here's the problem with the small government, small L libertarianism. You know, if we just had a smaller, weaker federal government, if you had a weaker federal government, then people acknowledge you got to have a government. You know, they're not so far out there to just have this complete freaking fantasy land of if you had no government, then everybody would just. You know, they recognize you have to have a government, but they say the answer is to have a weak government, a weak state, so that way they're not imposing, you know, they don't become oppressive on the citizenry. There's a way to keep them in check. And on the surface, that sounds nice. The problem with that, the reason you have to have a state with authority and with strength is because who's going to shut down the oligarchy? When the Soviet Union fell, you saw this in Russia, when the Soviet Union fell, you know, they had a weak state after that. When it all dissolved, you look at Russia, when the whole Soviet Union thing collapsed and then Russia was under Yeltsin, they by definition had a weak state. And what happened? You know, the oligarchs just began gang raping the country while everybody else is fighting over a, you know, piece of bread crust or some shit. You know, that was a weak state. You have to have a state with strength to keep the oligarchy in check. I am 100% convinced the reason we're always presented the false paradigm of communism or this is because either way, the same people are running things. If you snapped your fingers today and put in an official communist regime, the same people would be running it that are running it today. They just flip it over. It's two sides of the same coin. So you have to have a stronger state in order to keep the oligarchs in check. Otherwise, they're just going to steamroll over everybody. The founding fathers that, you know, have been practically deified here, you know, they basically tried more or less a weak government, a weak state sort of thing. And that lasted less than 100 years when the American, what they call the Civil War, which it wasn't a civil war, but the American Civil War was the end of that. You know, that went out the window. You know, and the American experiment, people say the American experiment, it may not be working out so good. The American experiment failed in the 1800s when it became clear that this wasn't a voluntary union at all. The American experiment was over. And again, the answer now, because look, you're not going to save the system. It's you don't want to. We don't, any of us want to go through the hardship, you know, economically and whatnot as it deteriorates, but it's the system itself. It's a systemic problem. The system is just going to have to finish burning itself out. That's the answer. You know, I don't vote. And it's so funny because before this last the last presidential election, you know, people would be just Texas, you know, Trump country. And, you know, people would be like, well, I hope you're going to, you know, like day before election day, you're going to be voting tomorrow, right? You're going to go vote for Trump, right? You know, it's just like, I'm sitting here silently pointing with a facial expression like y'all can see that. You know, vote for Trump, right? You got to do your part, man. Trying to make America great again, trying to turn this thing around. And I tell people, I'm not voting. And they would look at me aghast. What do you mean you're not voting? If you're not voting, it's same as voting for the Democrats. That's a lie. I'm not voting for anybody. It's not the same as if I went and voted for the other side. That's stupid and untrue and a lie.
Can't believe you're not going to go vote for Trump.
I'm voting. They'd be like, well, you voted for Trump when he got in there the first time. Weren't you voting now? Because it was demonstrated in 2020 that all that shit's rigged. So if now all of a sudden they're basically projecting that they're going to install him, that we know he's going to be installed. So you're not going to get what you got the last time. It's not that I'm super smart, but by a long shot, believe me, I would be a lot better off than I am if I were, but it was just pretty obvious. You wouldn't believe how many of these same people now are just like, I'm so embarrassed I voted for this man. He's off his rocker. What the hell? This isn't anything I voted for. And I just sit here and I just grin from ear to ear. Cheshire Cat. just. What can I tell you, bro? I've never been so proud to have not voted. You know, because I don't have any responsibility for it. But I was thinking about the don't vote thing. Because people try to tell you, well, if you don't vote, you're not doing anything. You're doing a lot. Now, I've said this, I'm not going to belabor the point because I've talked about it before. And you know, I assume most of you are regular listeners. But, you know, when you vote, you're just basically, you're agreeing that the system holds legitimacy. And that's what you're actually voting for. It doesn't matter which candidate you're voting for because they're all pre-selected. You're voting for legitimacy of the system. And withdrawing your vote says you do no longer view the system as legitimate. And I think that's a bigger deal than what people give it credit for. But I was thinking, what else? How effective, how strong is it to not vote? And a lot of talk now, people are, because you know, again, things that we were talking about 10 plus years ago or whatever now, because time flies by, it are now being discussed in the mainstream, particularly the Israel lobby and the power of the Israel lobby and how they essentially own every politician, lock, stock, and barrel. I mean, hell, some of these politicians are literally synonymous with the Israel lobby. Hell, there's that one congressman or whatever, and sometimes he shows up to congressmen wearing an IDF uniform. And that's okay, apparently. Why not? You know, the occupational forces are going to go parade around in their uniforms, rub it in your face. That's nothing new. But you know, people are openly talking about AIPAC in particular. There's more to the Israel lobby than just AIPAC because it's all a coordinated thing. AIPAC, SPLC, the anti-definition. That's more correct. Anti-definition league, because they don't want you defining who's doing what. You're not defaming anybody. You're just pointing out what people are actually doing. So I actually like that. The Anti-Defamation League, they don't want you defining who's doing what. All of it is a one unit. These are not separate organizations. I mean, they technically are in their face, but they all work in a coordinated manner. Mossad, all of it. They all work. It's one unit. But if you look at AIPAC, a lot of people talking about AIPAC now. It's trendy. It's okay to talk about AIPAC now. You won't lose your job now for talking about AIPAC. We're just the price you pay for being ahead of things, I guess, ahead of your time. But it's mainstream now to talk about AIPAC because it's just so blatantly in everybody's face. You can't, you know, this war for Israel that can't be even dressed up as anything else. You know, people talking about AIPAC and how much money they spend buying these politicians is literally what they're doing. They're buying these people. And think about this. If you don't vote, AIPAC didn't get anything for their money, did they? By not voting, AIPAC wasted their money. They spent, because they financed both candidates. You know, I mean, you all know this, but I often talk like sometimes I'm just addressing normies. You know, and y'all are sitting there going, yeah, no kidding. But they finance both parties. They both, you know, you got a Team R candidate hand-selected and a Team D candidate, once again, hand-selected, running against each other. And AIPAC, at the end of the day, has financed both sides. And if you vote for one of them and he gets in there, they purchase that politician. And whether it cost them, you know, $2 million if it's a less major race or more. Some of these guys have millions and millions of dollars spent to keep them in place. When you vote, you made AIPAC waste their money because You didn't participate. They didn't get nothing for their money. I mean, yeah, ultimately, at least for now, they get one of their hand-selected candidates are going to be by default put in there. But as that legitimacy breaks down, they hold an election and less than 10% of the people show up to bother voting. 20% of the population bothers voting. They can't even, you know, the system has lost complete legitimacy. And this leads to non-compliance. And this is where the actual power is. You think about the COVID thing, it was pushed and pushed and pushed, and then it went away. You know why it went away? It went away because we were reaching that precipice where more and more, you know, were, I should say, fewer and fewer people were complying. Because the compliance is enforced by social pressure. You think about COVID and you would go into town without your mask on, which would be me always. And most of the time, not always, but most of the time, you know, the people that were screeching or looking at you uncomfortably or looking like you were an evil doer were other people. They weren't the police. There were a few cases of that publicized to try to intimidate people, make them afraid. But for the most part, it was your other citizens that were enforcing it. Noncompliance. COVID had been pushed as far as they could, and noncompliance was starting to build momentum, so they shut it down because if it gets too widespread, then that could spread to other areas. They had to keep it contained to mask wearing. Noncompliance becomes cascading. You start with not voting, and then pretty soon you're not going along with this, and you're not going along with that, and you're not doing this little rule, and you're not following that little rule. And individually, those non-compliance gestures don't mean a lot, but collectively, it becomes wider and wider, and people push the envelope of what they're not going to comply with. And more people, you multiply that by millions of people now are not complying because the system has no legitimacy, and the system does, at the end of the day, wind up collapsing. That's why there's not going to be a draft, because that would put this on fast forward. You would just have massive noncompliance. You would have, you know, you would have regular, more conservative leaning people, red state people, if you want to categorize them that way, not complying. And you would have liberals not complying. You would have like nobody complying. I mean, red hat cultists would be complying, but they're all too old to serve anyway, so it doesn't matter. So I'm saying that you noncompliance has power. It does. It's not readily apparent, but it's there. And again, the way I think it's to you can constructively look at not voting as accomplishing something. If nothing else, AIPAC didn't get anything for their money, because when they're financing both sides, they're financing your vote. You know, they're buying your vote. With advertising and whatnot. When they buy these candidates, at the end of the day, they're buying your vote. And when you don't vote, they didn't get nothing for their money. You didn't sell it. You see, they may be trying to buy your vote, but you don't have to sell it. Especially considering they're not even giving you any of the money. It'd be more respectable. You know, they ain't going to vote. If AIPAC came and said, hey, GPD, we'll give you $100,000 if you'll vote for Trump. Not saying I would, but I would be tempted. I ain't gonna lie. I ain't gonna sit here and put on a front. I'm not gonna sit here and spend a bunch of mental and spiritual energy debating on the morality of it, because it's a silly made up debate that doesn't exist except in fantasy land. I don't have the energy for, you know, that. But I mean, if they were directly paying you to vote for somebody, yeah, there might be something in it for you. They're not even paying you, but they are buying your vote. You don't have to sell it. Just don't participate. In the short term, yeah, it ain't going to do anything. But as that momentum builds, it builds a crisis for the system, and it is a systemic issue. Now, I'm looking at my clock here, and I had planned to be into some more Christian specifics. In fact, actually, I thought about getting into the Christian specific stuff right off the bat. I was kind of intending to do that, and I started talking like I always do. I start talking, and we go from one thing to another thing to another thing, and next thing I know, I look here, and I'm 40 minutes into the show and probably already guaranteed to run long. Thank you, Sven, for your patience, and when I don't keep it within the time frame. I really do try. It just doesn't always work. I wanted to get into some Christian specific material here. And this is, you know, again, why I've kind of gone to this more relaxed format instead of saying it's halfway through the show, it's time to do the Christian specific segment, because I like having that flexibility. Sometimes I want to get into that at the get-go. Sometimes I want to get into it right off the bat. Sometimes, you know, like today, I wound up running longer than I meant to. You know, I might spend 20 minutes on a Christian topic or a non-Christian topic, and I like having the flexibility. But the trade-off of that is I'm going to wind up probably running long. So I want to get into, we're switching gears here. We're going to be looking in the book of John, chapter 5, because people spend a lot of energy, and I have to. We've had these discussions, and you know, about whether these Jews today, you know, how or how much related they are to Jews in the Bible. And, we've discussed that several times at length. That's not what I intend to do. But that discussion prior is always, virtually always focused on, you know, genetic relations. And we've had this discussion several times, you know, about, basically, my answer to that is, well, kind of, sort of, depends on what you're talking about. But very seldom, I was thinking about how very seldom the discussion is about the religion. How related is modern Judaism to what Jesus was dealing with in the Bible? Now, my Bible that I use whenever I use it, that I study every day, virtually every day, not always, but pretty much every day. Anyway, the Bible I use, King James Version. Y'all know that. This is a King James Version from the 1970s. I was a little kid. I think I was 7, 8 years old, and I got this for, I think it was a birthday present. And it was one of those, you know, with the, like the black pseudo leather over it, and it had the zipper, you know, like the edges are red, and it had the zipper that goes around. I'm proud of that. I was like 7, 8 years old, and I got this King James Bible. I had my own Bible. This was probably... it was probably my parents trying to encourage me to like going to church more than I did, but I'm proud of it. You know, I had the leather, the black, and the zipper, and I'm still, 50 years later, I'm still using this Bible. The zipper hadn't been with us. The zipper left this world long ago, and now all of the, pretty much all of the black cover is no longer with us either. We're just pages. It's just pages that are still kind of bound together. And I still use this Bible. I hope to use it for the rest of my life, however long that is. I think that's kind of nostalgic. You know, things, you hold on to things for a while. And I don't know. It's just like they accumulate value. But anyway, sorry. Got off on a side note. This is a King James Version of the Bible from decades ago that I was given. And, you know, so we're not using some modern translation. And yet, even in the King James Version of the Bible, you have this back and forth with the term Jews. This has obviously, observably led to people a certain amount of confusion. I thought we'd kind of try to, work on that a little bit, because again, every discussion about this is always about genetically. Are these the genetic Jews of the Bible? We've answered that. We've talked about that at length. I'm sure we will again in the future because it's a regular topic. But there's been virtually zero discussion on religious wise and understanding the two and how you can understand. Because this is what I want to do is I'm going to go through some. I'm not going to read the whole chapter because y'all would go to sleep. But I'm going to read some of John chapter 5. And just an example of how I go through, because you have this term Jew, and it's being used in two different contexts. Because again, you have to remember this was translated, you know, from Greek and ancient text. So, you know, depending on what you're talking, you know, which part of the Bible you're talking about, this was translated. And if you're familiar with foreign languages, there are just terms that do not what do I want to say? They don't directly translate. If you speak another language, I don't. I really wish I did. I understand some of other languages. But you understand, if you're just least vaguely familiar with other languages, that you run into terms that exist in one language and there is not a direct translation. You know, and or if you, so you use that term. I mean, like in Japanese, kami-sama, you know, which is a genetic, it's kind of a general term for God. So if a Japanese says kami-sama, he could be talking about a nine-tailed fox, or he could be a Christian talking about the Lord Almighty. I mean, it's just a general term because they don't really translate over. And you know that if you've ever messed with foreign languages, you will run into terms that there is not an exact translation for. So if you're translating, you just have to insert a term that's close enough. And I believe that's what you get into when you see Jew in your, say, King James version of your Bible. Now, I want to get into the meat of what happened here as well. I'm not going to just, you know, talk about, but that was one of the things I wanted to highlight. As an example of this, we start right off in chapter 5. After this, there was a feast. Now, it reads of the Jews. After this, there was a feast of the Judeans, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And so here it says Jews in the written text. When I'm reading it to myself, when I'm reading, I will insert Judeans, because you have to understand that Jew would, a lot of times in these older, from what I understand, these older written texts, you know, the like, for instance, they were referring to people that were from this area. So it was kind of a blanket term. You know, I've used it before. I've said, if you say, you know, Texan, because I'm from Texas, well, that can mean a lot of things. You're basically referring, you know, if you live somewhere else or overseas and someone says Texan, you probably imagine we all walk around wearing cowboy hats and we got our six shooters and it's like the old West, only we have pickup trucks. That's not exactly wrong. That's not exactly wrong. But we're just, at the end of the day, people are talking about someone from that general area. That was how it was used. You know, Jews, Judean, people from that general area. That's a lot of different people. You know, so like in this context, a feast of the Judeans encompasses a lot of things. It's just talking about people from that area. Again, you read Jews. And the problem with that is everybody inserts modern terminology. They see Jews and they're thinking Benjamin Netanyahu would have been there. You know, from Poland. He went over to Jerusalem to this feast of the Judeans. Now, as we continue in chapter 5, I'm skipping through because I'm assuming y'all are familiar with the story. You have the story of the guy that was laying by the pool. And at certain times, rarely, the water would move. And whoever got in the pool first in the pool is the winner. And this guy couldn't get healed. Jesus heals the guy, tells him, take up your mat and walk. Like I said, I'm just giving a summary because I'm assuming most of you are familiar with the story. It's a real well-known story from the Bible. If not, you're free to go and read through the story. So Jesus tells, we'll start at verse 8. Jesus said unto him, rise, take up thy bed and walk. Get up, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews, therefore, now see here, I'm not using Judean because it's not a general term. Both places here, it says Jews. Again, I'm not a Bible scholar. You can sit here and say, hey, GPD, you're full of it. That's fine. I'm giving you my opinion. I'm just telling you how I read it because it makes it easier for me to understand the context. Because when you read the first part, we've already gone over at the very beginning of this, it's clear that they're talking about a general group of people. But here, where we run into the term again in verse 10, it's obvious now that we're referring to a very specific group of people. And here I will read the term as it is written. So it was on the Sabbath, this guy walking, he gets up, he'd been crippled forever, maybe his whole life, and he's up walking with his mat. He's been healed. But it was on a Sabbath day. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. I've got to go on a tangent here. This is like living in a crime-infested shithole. If you're in America, you're going to be familiar with this. This is like you live in one of these crime-infested shithole cities in the United States. And, you know, there's people out there just holding their guns up sideways, spraying lead at each other, doing shootings and shooting up each other in houses and drive-bys and all of the, just a war zone. And here you are. Some cop has you on the side of the road spending 30 minutes lecturing you on not wearing your seatbelt for safety. This is how that struck me. They were living in a spiritually crime-infested shithole. And these guys show up and, whoa, you're walking around carrying a rolled-up mat. How dare you? It is the holy day. You notice the focus on the legalese. I'm going to get into the way I see some of this, you know, in relation to kind of modern Judaism and the Talmudic mindset in general as it relates to this, as we go along here. They're worried about him walking around carrying a rolled up mat on. See, this emphasis on legalism, on the law. Not, you know, because you read this a lot. You know, every time the Pharisees would show up, they'd be going on about the law. And people read that and they just assume they mean like the Ten Commandments or, you know, God's law that they gave to Moses. But this is not, they're talking about the law. Think of it more like a law in the United States where we have all these ridiculous laws to where you can wind up very realistically, and it happens every day, that you're driving in some crime-infested shithole of a city. And some cop is going to spend an hour and a half on the side of the road hassling you over not wearing a seatbelt, and maybe he's going to drag it out a little longer and bring the drug dog out so they can wave their hand and snap their fingers and get the dog to bark so they can say, oh, we need to search your car now. Because the reality is he doesn't want to go address any of the real problems. These guys, they didn't want to go address any of the real problems. That's why they're spending time worrying about this guy walking around. Walking around carrying his mat on the Sabbath day. Let's keep reading. And he answered them, he that made me whole. So in other words, he that healed him. Look, they were not living in cities with, you know, a million people in it. People knew this guy. They knew he'd been crippled all his life. You know, the Pharisees, they're not worried about that part. So he that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, what man is that which said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. So there's a crowd of people there, and he's like, I don't know, some dude. Afterward, now this is some time afterward. You say afterward, it didn't mean like 30 minutes later. Afterward, so this guy had been bound in captivity. There's something to learn. He'd been bound in captivity to being physically crippled for a long time, most if not all of his life. Sin is the same way. Think of this as a correlation to sin. He had been sinned. Jesus had come along and freed him from his physical crippledness. What did he do with the freedom? Well, we're going to know. We don't know specifically, but in verse 14, we know because afterwards, so sometime later, Jesus runs into him again. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. So this guy, we know then from this, that this guy had taken this freedom and was just indulging in sin. He wasn't taking it and really reflecting on a literal miracle that happened to him. He'd taken up, and now he can go along and just be like everybody else. A great thing had been given to him, And instead of really studying on that and relishing on it and praising God and trying to really learn about the Lord, he'd just gone off do whatever. So Jesus says, you know, better quit sinning or something worse will happen to you because something spiritual. Now, this gets into Jesus knew what he'd been up to. And it's something I'd actually intended to get into, and I don't have time today, and maybe we'll get into it. But the fact that, you know, and I can go through here, and I, again, this is something I actually planned to get into last week, didn't have time. Jesus retained his eternal view while in the temporal, and that's an amazing thing. And we could go in through the Bible. If y'all are interested in that, we can do it. Otherwise, we'll probably get to it at some point. But he retained his eternal view. In other words, he could see things outside of time as well as the temporal that he was in. This is an amazing thing and a very heavy thing to actually consider. And again, that's a topic for another day. But he was aware of what this guy was up to. He had the eternal view, the eternal eyesight, if you would. He knew what this guy had been doing. He's like, you know, you were given this time, you were given this freedom, and you're squandering it. You better, you know, quit sinning, because there's a lot worse things than being crippled laying by a pool. Because once this time runs out, it is out. You're done. Jesus gives him fair warning. Did the guy take the warning? Verse 15, as we continue, we're going to wind this up here in a minute. The man departed and told the Jews, I'm not saying Judean, I'm not using the term Judean, because we're not talking about a general group of people from an area. He went and told someone specifically. The Jews. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. Jesus gives him a warning, and he repays a miracle of being healing by going and snitching on him. How dare you tell me how to live my life? Who are you? I don't know, guy that healed you. Maybe he ought to have some authority. And therefore did the Jews, again, this wasn't everybody from that area, this is a specific group of guys. The Jews persecute Jesus and sought to kill him. They sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Never mind, somebody had been healed. They couldn't do that. They're straining at the gnat of the legality of it. Now, this leads us to the relationship between the modern, you know, the Talmudic mindset, modern Judaism, and all, you know, and what was being practiced there. I'm not saying it's the exact same thing. That's not what I'm saying, but there is a relationship. But more importantly, I wanted to get into, you know, because I do think this is, you know, you can see this being the seed of where, you know, their viewpoint is today. Now, I think what's confusing for a lot of people, what I really wanted to get into about this, is because you do see the relation. I mean, the Talmudic mindset, you know, modern Judaism, and what the Pharisees were practicing. I mean, you can obviously see these are related. You know, it's evolved and changed over the years, but you know, you can see the relation. It's pretty obvious. But what's confusing, I think, a lot of times when people read this, these accounts, is because they are going on about the law and the Sabbath. And we understand if you read in the Old Testament, and they sit here and they bring up Moses. They would be real big on bringing up Moses and the law. And so people think these guys were enforcing Old Testament, you know, law handed down by God. But they weren't. They weren't doing that. That's not what they were doing. And I think it gets confusing because Jesus rebukes him at one point in time. And I'm not going to go look it up now. You can Google it and then find the verse and read yourself, you know, but he tells them, y'all say, you know, y'all talk about the law of Moses, and but the law says honor thy father and mother, but you've made up a new law. You say, oh, if you say this is dedicated to God, then you don't have to help your mom and daddy out. You can just say that's for God and keep it for yourselves. He says you constantly make up your own rules and overwrite the rules that you go on about. Again, they were focused on this legalese, but they used the term, they used the law and Moses and such as a weapon on people. And I was thinking, you know, at that time, you know, it was kind of intermingled. You know, and I think this is where it gets so confusing, because they bring up the law on the Moses, this is a Sabbath day, and people knew that there were special days when you weren't supposed to basically do anything in the Old Testament. And so they think, well, these guys were actually holding up the ancient traditions, which generally, in most cases, is not a negative thing. So why is it a negative thing now? Because, you know, and were these guys, and one of the things I always point to is, in the Old Testament, the priest class were the Levites. These are Pharisees. So who are these guys? It's a different sect. It's a different, and I was thinking of a comparison. So here's an easy way to understand the dynamic at that time, which is really what I wanted to focus on today, not the relationship so much. You know, we can see that with like the modern, you know, the Talmudic mindset you see in the world today, or modern Judaism. But what's really I wanted to look at or point out is the relationship then at that time, what Jesus was dealing with, in other words. Because on the one hand, Jesus says he didn't come to eliminate the law. But, you know, on the other hand, these guys are using the law to try to bludgeon him with, to try to persecute him with, to try to justify going after him. So what's the actual relationship between what the Pharisees were doing, or as it's written here, as we just read, the Jews in King James Version, that's the word that was used at that time, and the laws as handed down through Moses, you know, the laws to govern their society. And why does it seem all mixed up, and why does that seem confusing? So I was thinking a way to understand this. Why these guys are talking about the law and Moses and Sabbath days, and you can find those things in the Old Testament, but they were twisting it all up. An easy way to understand it is if you were looking at today, and when somebody talks about Christianity, yes, we're going to say Christianity. If somebody uses the term Christianity, you know, we say, oh, well, that person, you know, when people talk about Christianity, this is a broad term, isn't it? I mean, you know, people get a picture in their head, but what does it mean? We're getting something interesting here. Think about that. We throw the term around, Christians. Christian, they're a Christian. That person is a Christian. They're a Christian believer. But now, if on the one hand, you take somebody, for instance, you look at the Christianity in the Orthodox, Christian Orthodox Church, and then on the other hand, side by side, you put up one of these people that does this whole, you know, pick up the snakes, and they go, you know, they start yelling and screaming and putting their hands up and going, and they say they're speaking in tongues and get down on the floor and roll around and holler, and they're a Christian. You see, we're using the same term, and this doesn't look anything alike, does it? You look at Orthodox Christianity with its, you know, very, what do I want to say, you know, somewhat rigid structure, hierarchy, adherence to tradition. And then you look at the person over here picking up a rattlesnake going, the Lord says that you can pick up the snake and it won't bite you. But when people say Christian, they're talking about these people who are very, very different as far as what they're practicing, are all lumped in under the same term. This is the dynamic Jesus was dealing with. This is why it gets confusing, I think. You had the Pharisees, Sadducees, you have people talking about Moses' law, and then you got them going around doing this completely different thing, and you're like, what is going on? Well, because this is what Jesus was dealing with. They'd gotten so far from the original laws handed out by Moses, which many of those laws were about how to govern a country, and they didn't have a country anymore. They didn't have a nation anymore. So they were already kind of irrelevant for their situation. And so what you had is people had done all their own interpretations of what these things mean. You know, sometimes Jesus was in conflict with the Sadducees. Sometimes it was the Pharisees. But they were all lumping themselves because they were all from the general area. All this was kind of associated with the area of Judea. And that's why you wind up with, you know, in the translation, they say Jews. They're from that area. But then you get into, he's dealing with the Pharisees here, and it just says the Jews, but he's talking about a specific group of people. And my purpose of bringing this up is, like I said, I read the Bible, I want to say every day, but you know what I just read here is probably all I'll read today, what I've shared, what we've gone over today. Well, Monday through Friday, at least, Friday I have to do the Daily National Spin. I don't always have time for the Bible. But anyway, I try. And I understand that as you read, even if you're reading the King James Version, that you see these different terms and these different dynamics taking place, and it's really easy. Look, I'm sympathetic. You know, if you're working every day and your time for the Bible is 30 minutes to an hour one day a week on Sunday, you know, these things get confusing and you literally don't have the time to sit around. I figure if nothing else, I've got the time to sit around and study and think about these things. The least I can do is share it with y'all because I understand you don't have the time. I'm not being critical. I get it. That's one of the problems. That's one of the reasons this wage slavery system exists, is to make sure man doesn't have time to seek out God. God has blessed me with having time, at least, to seek him out. And so I run into this, and I know you do, and I know other people do. The least I can do is at least share how I have worked through, you know, understanding the dynamics, what's going on. So then when you read this and you're like, well, the King James Version is talking about Jews. You know, does that mean these people we have around here today? Or were these people, they were, you know, Jesus said he didn't come to do away with the law. But why were these people railing about him doing away with the law if they weren't supposed to be doing this on the Sabbath? And why is this all so confusing? But if you just think of it in the context of, okay, use the term Christian. Are you talking about a snake-grabbing holy roller? Or are you talking about a Catholic and they're burning incense and doing a mass in Latin? Or are you talking about Orthodox Christianity with their structures? They're all very different things. Which are you talking about? But we use the blanket term. It's the same in these translations. It's the same. They're using blanket terms, but they're covering. That's just because that's the best you can do in the translation. This is why when I'm reading in the New Testament, particularly when I'm reading in the New Testament and you come across, you know, Jews, you know, sometimes I will read it as Judean. If they're talking about people from a general area, you know, but if they're talking about the Pharisees, yeah, I go with Jews because the behavior is pretty much more or less the same. You can see the root of it, that it comes from that Pharisaical, which was already a bastardized version of the original laws. You know, the original, what, you know, the Levites were in charge of back in the Old Testament. It was, they had incorporated all this Babylon. They were incorporating all this Babylonian stuff and this legalese nonsense in here. You know, but anyway, I will use those terms. And I think, and I thought it might be helpful if you're reading through your Bible and you keep running into that term and you're sitting there going, well, is that Jews? I mean, what are we talking about? Well, it depends on the context. And I thought it just might help to have that advice that, you know, ask yourself when you run into that term, even in your King James Bible. Ask yourself, well, what are they talking about? What is the context here? They're using the same word. So what is the context here? And if you do that, you're not changing the meaning by any way, shape, or form. But I do think it helps better, easier to make it understandable. Anyway, I managed to run about 10 minutes long. So we got to wrap this up. We'll get back, no doubt, into more interesting topics. I could go and go, but we're not going to go and go. So but we will go and go next week. And hopefully I'll see you here for it. Hope you enjoy the rest of the week. As always, I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.